Jason and Kelly Kravsky are recognized in North America as the media couple. Last year, 2010, they authored a book entitled Facebook and Your Marriage. And this past November, they wrote an article about Reverend Cedric Miller, who is a New Jersey pastor. You'll take a moment to Google this reverend. You'll see the irony of the edict that Reverend Miller proclaimed in his church. He basically issued an ultimatum that required all pastors and staff and leaders of his congregation to remove their Facebook accounts immediately, or they would have to cease and desist from working in his congregation. And the Kravskys wrote an article in response to this edict of Reverend Miller, and they said rather than abstain from using Facebook, they felt it might be more appropriate that members of the congregation would learn to use Facebook more effectively. Safe Facebook use. And they gave a few lessons, a few models, how to use Facebook in a way that would increase intimacy with one's spouse and not create a situation where one would become disconnected from one's spouse. The first idea they suggested was that one should declare their marital status on Facebook. This can be reflected in having a family picture, a photo of you and your wife, not just yourself on Facebook, and also to put as your status married. When I put as my status married on my Facebook page, I started getting all of these funny messages from my friends. Mazel tov, thank God you're married, you have three children already. So it's cute, but it's certainly an important aspect of Facebook to be able to protect your marriage by sharing with the Facebook universe that you are married. The second idea that they suggest is to compliment your spouse on Facebook. When you're updating your status, share positive feedback with your friends, with the world, about your spouse, how wonderful he is, how wonderful she is. These are all tools that can be used to protect one's relationship in using Facebook. These are, in essence, various gifts they describe. I'm not going to give you the litany that they describe now, but the Kravskys list in their article 7 or 8 different methods. We call them gedorim, protective devices that one can use when one is involved and one is engaged in the use of Facebook to protect their intimacy, to protect their relationship. And using this as a springboard, as a starting off point, one of the things that I'd like to focus on this afternoon is this idea of positive communication in and expressing positive feelings and warmth in our marriages, in our relationships with our spouses. And I'm going to introduce this topic with something that I call the Stern College Conundrum. I have the opportunity to counsel many young women at Stern College, women of marriageable age, and they often will come to me with the following problem. They're dating a boy, they'd like to get engaged, and the young man says to the young woman that he is not willing or able to enter into the shidduch to actually become engaged until the woman says to him 3 very special words. She wants to hear the words, I love you, before he is willing to give her that wedding ring. Before she says those 3 words, he's not going to do it. And she says to him, come on, those are such intimate words. Those are such deep words. Those are scary words. I'm not ready to say I love you yet. That's something for marriage. I'm not ready to say that at this stage. And often young women will come and they will ask me for advice what they should do. It's interesting because Rav Soloveitchik points out in his essays in Family Redeemed, he quotes about Yitzchak Avinu vayikach et Rivka vatehi lo li'isha, that Yitzchak took Rivka as a wife, vayeha veha, right? And then he loved her, like the position of these young women, that one can in fact fall in love after the relationship, through marriage. But I'm just using this as a springboard, using words, I love you, using verbal expressions to communicate before the relationship and certainly in the relationship, a way to increase intimacy in the age of Facebook and Twitter and all of these complexities is to ensure that we are constantly reaffirming and affirming, verbally expressing the love and the appreciation that we have for our spouse. There was an interesting article in the Wall Street Journal, in the personal journal section. It appeared in the February 8th edition, 2011. The title of the article was, I just called to say, aham, ah, I love you. It's a takeoff on the song. If I just called to say I love you. But they put in the middle, aham, ah, the various pauses, because it's something, Elizabeth Bernstein wrote this article on relationships. It's very difficult for people to truly express their feelings in relationships, to say I love you, I appreciate you. And often these challenges emanate from families of origin. Eric Fromm, in his classic book, The Art of Loving, talks about how each of us, as we grow, as we develop, as we evolve, need to individuate from our parents, from our families of origin. And the healthiest among us, what we will do is we will take our family of origin, we will take our relationship with our parents, and we will take them with us. Instead of being stuck back in our childhood, we bring healthy visions and views of our parents with us. But often that impacts our ability to communicate with our spouses, because in the back of our heads is lingering that thought, did we observe our parents interacting with each other in such ways? Were our parents expressive with each other, saying things as I love you and thank you so much? And we think to ourselves, when we were children, did our parents speak to us in these ways? So certainly, sometimes it's necessary to explore, sometimes through therapy and through other, you know, mechanisms or realms, to understand our families of origin, how that impacts upon how we interact currently in the present with our spouses. She writes in this article, Elizabeth Bernstein, in this Wall Street Journal article, she writes that sometimes people have to find substitute words. Sometimes the I love yous are difficult. We're not ready to post on Facebook, and we're not even ready to say it in the intimacy of our own home. That might be difficult for some, but we have to find other means of expression. It could be, I love being with you, having you in my life is fantastic, I love the soup you just made me, I love that you're such a great earner. But certainly one of the ways to increase intimacy in an increasingly complex world is to ensure that we are expressing our hakaras hatov, we're expressing our thanks, and we are saying it, we're putting it into words. Handwritten notes is another way. Some people are more comfortable in writing as opposed to speaking, but putting things into print and to leave a note for one's spouse, to give them a note, to give them a card, these are also ways that we can always ensure to enhance our intimacy. We also know that technology in and of itself has become a barrier to communication. On some level, the advent of so many different technologies has made it easier to communicate, but unfortunately we use these methods to infringe and negatively impacts our relationships. If we text our spouse, so often everything is so shorthand, we don't fully flush out our feelings. We put a little smiley face. There are all different ways that we might try to communicate, but often the shorthand ends up effectuating a situation where there's less time and there's less communication, as opposed to more types of interaction. This is going to bring us full circle to go back a little bit to our Stern College conundrum and this issue that many young women have in terms of, should they say I love you, shouldn't they say I love you? This actually has interesting import in the realm of halacha as well. There is a discussion in the laws of harchakos. There's something in the realm of marital intimacy, in the laws of nidus, in the laws of taras hamishpacha, there is something that we refer to as the laws of distancing. Now, it doesn't mean that we're supposed to be distant from our spouses, chas v'shalom, that's not what it means, but it does mean, as the Aruch HaShulchan points out, that there are times when, if you have an individual man and female, male and female who are not married, so they have an isser yichud, they're prohibited to be secluded together. Now, we're not going to institute an isser yichud for a married couple. What, every 2 weeks of the month, a married couple is going to have to move out? You have to have a second apartment. You have to be incredibly wealthy to get married. That wouldn't make particular sense. So Chazal came up with a concept that's patterned after the laws of yichud for individual people, for single people, and they have instituted it in marriage as well. It's called the laws of harchakos. There are various laws that are instituted in terms of passing items from to each other and in terms of separating beds and different restrictions in terms of the realm of eating. So one of the discussions that's discussed by contemporary poskim, by halachic decisors in this realm, is in fact, is it permissible to say to your spouse, I love you, to use those type of intimate expressions and words when one's wife is prohibited, when one's wife is a nida, if one can in fact speak this way, in this loving way. And some poskim have actually suggested that it may have roots in certain sociological factors. And it's that debate that we talked about between these young men and this young woman before they're about to get engaged. Some would argue that if, like the boy who's comfortable using such expressions before marriage, that maybe reflects that he doesn't, not he doesn't take the word so seriously, but it doesn't, it's not as intimate to him. He could say it even before marriage. So those poskim would argue that even after marriage, in marriage, when one's wife is prohibited to oneself, one can still use such expressions because it's not too intimate. It's not violative of that level of intimacy that we abstain from during the period of nidus. Whereas other poskim, particularly if you're in worlds where people don't use such expressions, such intimate expressions before marriage, that reflects that this is something that's saved especially for marriage, and those poskim might have suggested that maybe it would be prohibited to use such terminology in the context of marriage when one's wife is in nidus. I just mentioned that parenthetically, that there's actually even halachic import and ramifications for this discussion of intimacy. But even if one can't use those particular words of I love you, but one still has to, of course, find other ways to express intimacy and closeness and not to feel distant from one's spouse during this period of the month. The well-known, just to conclude this piece, this segment, the well-known marital therapist John Gottman talks about the healthy ecology of marriage. And there he points out, he posits that there needs to be a 5-to-1 ratio, 5 times positive feedback and positive affirmation to every 1 criticism. So that's, I think, a beautiful way to sum up this idea of how to enhance intimacy in our relationships. We have to be incredibly sensitive that we're always giving positive feedback, positive body language, positive expressions, and particularly in our use of social media, we have to be careful in the realm of Facebook to use it to communicate and build up our spouses and make them feel secure, even though we're working in this social media world, and not to use it as a shortcut and as a substitute for real, effective, meaningful communication through face-to-face contact as well as through written communication. Now, a second aspect, a second dynamic that's involved in increasing intimacy in this very, very busy world that we live in is what's called the art of listening. There's an excellent book by Michael P. Nichols entitled The Art of Listening, and there he talks about how it's so critical that people listen, really give of themselves over to another person so they could hear what it is that their spouse or their partner or their friend is saying. There's a beautiful idea that I once heard in the name of a Hasidic Rebbe to explain the minhag, the practice that often the kala, the bride, will give her chasson, will give her husband-to-be a talis the day of the wedding. This beautiful practice that she gives him the talis. And it was explained once that the reason why she gives him a talis is because the husband is about to have a transformative experience in the realm of Jewish prayer. He's been dating this young woman, and he finally discovers that there's somebody who really, really cares about him, who's really invested in him, who really listens to every detail of everything that he says. And he has this awakening, and he makes what we call a kal vachomer, right? He makes a logical deduction that if this woman, if my wife can listen to me and cares about me, then how much more so the Ribbono Shalom, Hashem, also hears me, cares about me, listens to me. He understood this his entire life, but now because he's really felt it in a real way, being listened to in the most intimate way, it transforms every aspect of his relationships, both Ben Adam Uchavera, between man and his friend, as well as Ben Adam Amokom, between man and the Ribbono Shalom. And that's why she gives him a talis to concretize this new dynamic and this new facet of his ability to serve Hashem, because he recognizes Hashem must be listening to him too in the most intimate way. And of course, we have to think about the opposite direction, you know, what the husband gives the wife that also concretizes it. I don't know if it's the candlesticks or jewelry or whatever it is, but there are different aspects also that, of course, are transformed in both facets of the relationship because of the ability of one to listen to the other. Listening, Nichols explains, is about suspension of our own needs. It's an active process, suspending our reactions and using empathy to really be there with another, to be there for them, to really make them feel, with our facial expressions even, how much we empathize with their plight, how much we care about them. It's also about asking permission, asking reshus. Is now a good time for you? Oftentimes, we vomit information on our spouses, on others, and we have a lot on our minds, but they also, maybe we walked into something, they're not really ready, they're not fully in the place where they can best reciprocate and best listen to us and give us what we need. So we have to, of course, be very, very careful to ensure that it's a good time. Sweetie, honey, is now a good time for you? You know, is now the time when you're best able to respond and listen to what it is I want to communicate? And Nichols records in his book as well that most of us think that we listen better than we actually do. This is something very important. I'll just repeat that. Most of us think that we listen better than we actually do. Yeah, are you a good listener? Yeah, I'm a good listener, but oftentimes we miss all different types of nuances when we are in the process of listening. He also says that listening is submission of self and immersion in other. Beautiful quote as well. Submission of self and immersion in other, really being there with the other person. There is something that I heard from somebody, I don't even know where it came from, but there's an idea that I heard. It's something called the email voice, that many times when we are communicating and our spouses are talking to us on the phone, the spouses sometimes pick up, there's something called email voice. That's the voice that you're checking your email while you're on the phone with your spouse. Something that many of us are guilty of, that we're often doing other things. We can even be in the house and it be 5 feet away from our spouses and we can still be doing other things. Our mind can be elsewhere. We're often distraction. It's not the panim el panim, the face-to-face, that each and every one of us deserves and yearns for. And this is, of course, something that we need to be incredibly careful about. There's also a wonderful therapist in Texas. Her name is Susan McMahon. She wrote a book called The Portable Therapist. It's out of print. I read it about 10, 15 years ago, a little book. She says there's a beautiful idea. This is a realm that we find in the realm of business. It's called the 80-20 rule. And it's something we find in the realm of fundraising, the 80-20 rule. And people talk about now the 90-10 rule. She suggests it's very, very applicable in the realm of relationships, that oftentimes people spend 80 to 90% of their time talking and only 10 to 20% of their time listening. And if we want to have successful relationships and increased intimacy in such a crazy world with so much technological advances and so many distractions, we have to ensure that we reverse the trend, that we try to listen 80% of the time. 90% might be too much to ask, but if we listen 80% of the time and we speak only 20% of the time, McMahon claims that would completely transform our relationships. Just want to leave off with two beautiful Divrei Torah brief ideas. We're all familiar with the concept that Ish and Isha, that Ish is spelled Aleph Yud Shin and Isha Aleph Shin Hey, that it's both as Esh Esh, fire, fire, and the Isha has the Hey and the male has the Yud. Yud Hey, Ka, the Shem Hashem, that if, beautiful idea, that if the name of God is in the relationship, so then the relationship will have a Kayomo, it will last. And if Chas V'Shalom, God is not there, then it could be fiery, Esh and Esh. Just want to suggest maybe a deeper insight to this idea that the Ka, the Shem Hashem, represents understanding that there's a deeper value here. It's not about me, it's about higher values. It's about serving the Rabbono Shalom, and it's about giving to my spouse. The imagery of the Ka, the Shem Hashem, in this with the two Esh, is meant to teach us that we're meant to give. We have to give by listening, we have to give by positively expressing feelings for each other. And if Chas V'Shalom we don't do that, it could be Esh, it could be fiery. But Esh also represents the idea that there is Mesiris Nefesh. Hashem represents the Mesiris Nefesh. We give of ourselves, we serve Hashem, we're Avodim. And the Esh represents that it's fire, it's painful sometimes to have to sacrifice ourselves in this way, to truly give of each other. But nothing meaningful ever evolves in life without toil, without difficulty, without hard work. And this is certainly something that we each need to aspire to in our relationships. And finally, Rav Shlomo Volba, the famed Mashkiach Ruchani in Yerushalayim for many years. He just had his 6th Yahrt site this past Pesach, recording this right after Pesach. So Rav Volba records in his Kuntras for Chasanim, he says that Shana Rishona, this well-known concept in Halacha that has halachic import, that the first year of marriage, there is this particular dinim that to forge the closeness between husband and wife. He says Shana Rishona is not a quantitative period of time, but rather conceptually it's something qualitative. It's not just a period of time, amount of years. Shana Rishona could be 5 years, it could be 7 years. Shana Rishona is that time period whereby the couple really begins to feel comfortable with each other, and they're really able to begin to implement these various tools that we've discussed, the communication skills, the positive verbal affirmations, the listening skills, honing that, that even in the realms of social media that we all frequent and we all use to ensure that we're not cutting off our lifelines with our spouses, but rather using them as well to enhance the intimacy that we all so deeply yearn for. Thank you.